All right, shit shows. Breathe to Heal is officially back, and this time we're going deeper than ever before. The theme of this third round is release and receive, releasing everything that's been stuck for way too long so you can finally receive the peace, love, and safety I know you've been craving. The 7-week healing journey goes beyond talk therapy by working directly with your nervous system using breathwork, somatic practices, and parts work to give you the kind of healing your body has been waiting for. This is all facilitated by fellow shit show member and certified somatic and breathwork practitioner Teresa, who's just added some fresh breathwork certifications to her toolkit. And the best part of all, this all happens right within the shit show healing community. So think of it like a healing journey where you can show up exactly as you are, like you're hanging out with your friends on the couch in your pajamas, instead of feeling like you're in some stuffy environment. So this all kicks off on Tuesday, January 13th, and early bird pricing is on through December 11th. So you, yes you, the person that's been wanting to sign up for the past two rounds but hasn't, how about we do the damn thing already, okay? Head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. That is breathe with an E at the end. adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal to learn more and grab your damn spot.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Safe love feels unsafe when unsafe is the only version of love your body's ever known. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any listeners, my name is Andrea. I'm a total and complete shit show, and I am an adult child. And if you're wondering what the hell that means, well, an adult child is somebody whose unresolved childhood pain is surfacing and playing out in adulthood, and not in a good way. And if you're still wondering what the hell that means, I suggest you go check out the ACA laundry list, but let me just summarize it, okay? That is the 14 traits of an adult child of an alcoholic dysfunctional family. So see if you can relate to some of these, okay? Approval seeking and people pleasing, being frightened by angry people or any personal criticism, an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, feeling guilty when you stand up for yourself or having a hard time saying no or setting boundaries, having a hard time feeling your feelings or expressing certain feelings, struggling with substance abuse issues or other addictive patterns, or having a pattern of finding yourself in relationships with people who have substance abuse issues or other addictive tendencies, a deep fear of abandonment, being very judgmental of yourself or others, all that fun stuff. Okay, so if you're related to a few of those, you're probably in the right place. And this is the podcast where we talk about what the hell to do about that. We curse here. You've been warned. Welcome aboard this hot mess of a ship. So today, folks, we are diving deep with Amber Trejo. You might know her as the integrative trauma therapist. I'm sure many of y'all follow her on Instagram. She's obviously a therapist who really focuses on helping parents heal themselves while also trying to be a damn parent. And in this interview, she is sharing about something that she has never really spoken about publicly. So yes, I am the vulnerability whisperer. You don't understand how many times I get emails from guests after I interview them saying that they're having a major vulnerability hangover. So that is my expertise, and we're covering just a whole lot of ground. So let's get on with the damn show. But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the join shit show, my online support community, where we have 6 weekly Zoom support groups where you can connect with other fellow shit shows who are doing the damn work to heal. This is a a healing community that is actually fun to be a part of with a group of people who are super dedicated to this healing work. I think that when you're willing to invest in being a part of a community like this, mind you, it is just less than a dollar a day, okay? But you have people who are serious about doing the work. And this is a place where you can show up exactly as you are, even if that means being a shit show, and you will be loved and accepted for it. This is relational trauma, folks. We heal relational trauma through safe relationships. And this is a place where you can do so. This is a 24/7 support system at your fingertips, in your back pocket, available to you whenever you need us. So you, yes, you, yes, you. The person that's been wanting to join for forever. Can we just do it already? Okay, let's just do the damn thing. Let's pull the trigger. Let's get those little fingers right now and go to the episode show notes. Click that damn link, or you can go to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow. You're missing out, okay? We're having a lot of fun on this healing ship. Next, give me a follow on Instagram and TikTok at adultchildpod. Last but not least, whatever you do, please, please, please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. It really helps me to reach more listeners, more suffering adult children out there who need to hear this damn podcast. Thank you. Love you all. All right, y'all. Well, we have licensed marriage and family therapist, Amber Trejo. I'm going to say it right, right?
Yes. Did I say it right? That's right. That's right.
Welcome. Buckle up. How are you feeling about this?
I'm excited, other than our, like, me not having my charger and then the issues with the computer. It's kind of been like, it's always like that with a podcast, though. It's like, okay, something's going to stress me out at first, but I feel really excited just to get to be here and to talk with you and get to be on this podcast.
Yeah, excited to have you. Excited. So here's where we're starting. Okay.
Okay.
What was the moment that you realized that your childhood screwed you up a lot more than you initially thought it did?
There were so many. I'm trying to think about the first time that I realized that. I think in my early 20s, I had some moments of clarity because my drinking had gotten really, really bad. And I was just in this situation, in this place.
Are you where sober?
I'm not. Sober, curious. And I have done different times where I'll go alcohol free and stuff, but no, not sober. But I was like blacking out every night and in all these different relationships that were just really bad for me. Could not get my shit together for the life of me. And I think that was the first time that I realized like, okay, I'm not okay. I'm not doing well. And all of these things that had happened to me in my past are showing up. So that was like the first, I think I didn't quite like understand, okay, you had complex, well, I definitely wouldn't have used the terminology complex trauma or CPTSD or anything. It was just like, what is happening to me? I'm not okay. Like, and actually a lot of fear over, am I ever going to be okay? Mm. So I kind of just lost hope in this way of ever having kids or ever having a healthy relationship or ever being better than my parents were. It was kind of like this feeling of I'm stuck in this cycle and I don't know how to get out of it. And I think I had an indication inside that like, it's because of all this shit that happened to me, but it wasn't until I, you know, further down the road when I started developing like my first secure attachment with my husband and, well, it wasn't secure at the time, but just like when I started getting really attached, when I fell in love with my husband, when I first had my first child, like those were when all of a sudden I started having these really big trauma responses and it was like, okay, I'm not healed from this. I'm not okay. And I need to figure out what's going on inside of me.
Did you start going to therapy or get any sort of help when you had that realization in your 20s?
No, I never went to therapy. We didn't ever. I mean, like I went to therapy as a young child for a couple sessions. And then after that, therapy wasn't really even on my radar in the early 20s, like in my early 20s.
And so then how are things showing up in your relationship with your husband?
So in my relationship with my husband, All my attachments were very disorganized. Like whenever I would get into a romantic relationship, it was always push and pull, push and pull. And I started to see that a lot more with my husband. We were long distance at first, and that felt great. Like I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm doing so much better than I ever had before. So even though it was starting to get like serious, it was like, I'm okay, like being deep. I'm okay being vulnerable. I'm okay sharing myself with you and my past and my family. Like, he was the first person I ever took to my mom's house, you know? He was the first significant other that had ever met my mom. And I was 27 at this point in time because I had been like so ashamed of everything. And so that all felt good. And it wasn't until we were like married and in the same house and together all the time that I started feeling just like really triggered, just this feeling, what I now know to be an emotional flashback, like this feeling of like, oh my gosh, something bad's gonna happen, this dread, this doom. And a lot of times I would go into these old patterns that I saw a lot in my mom. My mom was in a lot of relationships and she was very verbally abusive. She was very intense. She would scream a lot. And I just felt like this rage coming out of me that I was like, I don't like that. And I don't get where that's coming from. So
What were
that's
your
when I first started to
triggers?
note it for me. So my husband is an anxious attacher. And so as disorganized, when someone's anxious, it's like, get away from me. Like, and so I would just be really harsh to him. Like, I just noticed myself showing up is really harsh, just kind of like, get out of my space, get away from me. Him being around like all the time and just like wanting to be physically affectionate all the time, that was a big trigger for me. And then I kind of noticed, which I haven't talked much about this, but maybe I have talked a little bit about this, like this paranoia, like, and this is a big part of emotional flashbacks, like this feeling of like something's going on that I don't know about and no facts or evidence about it, right?
Like
And a lot of
infidelity?
times, yes, like a lot of times, for me, what would come up is like this, like I would think of it as like gut intuition, like something bad is happening. So I would like go through his phone, right? And then like it wouldn't find anything. Like, okay, so, and he's not like gone from the house for long periods of time. He's not like staying out late. Like he's not doing anything that's giving me
Reason to feel that
actual
way.
reasons to not trust, but it's just like this deep fear of like, oh, he's gonna do something and I'm not gonna know about it. And then I'm gonna be humiliated. That was always like a really big thing for me.
An impending
And I
sense of
think,
doom.
yes, impending sense of doom.
Go ahead, I cut you off.
I was just gonna say for me, you know, this is a part of my story that is really hard to share. But when I was in third grade, my dad, it came out that he had sexually abused family members and he just like left overnight. And then in the days after, there was so much information disclosed to me that really shouldn't have been disclosed to me as a child. And so I think for me, what came up was like I was always like something's gonna happen and I'm going to be betrayed,
Blindsided.
blindsided. Exactly. And so that really came up a lot in our marriage. And sexual stuff too. Like I was always like worried about marrying someone who was gonna be a sexual deviant, right? Because that was like so much of my trauma. And that I was gonna marry someone that was gonna have some deep dark secret, you know, and that I was gonna be totally have no clue about it. So that was always a really big fear for me. So I felt like I would always be two steps ahead whenever I was like dating anybody in the way of like, I'm gonna end this as soon as it starts to get serious because it would feel really scary. And with my husband, I never felt that. Like I felt safe and I felt like I had done a lot of work, not in therapy, but just on my own about what was coming up for me and the people I was attracted to. And my husband was completely different than anybody I had ever been attracted to. And
What
we
was your
had
type
such a
prior to
good, total bad boy. Like I was totally in love with Eminem. He was my dream man, like rapping about murdering his wife.
good.
Total Totally different. And yeah, I always had a thing for like really bad, like I always joke around like underground rappers, but like really, really underground, like nobody knew who they were.
Yeah, they're just like rapping on the street corner. Buy my CD. They'll sell their CDs on street
Yes.
corner.
Yes. So it was so funny because it was like all the things that I wanted. Like I wanted a healthy relationship. I wanted, to have all of these things, but it was not what I was drawn to. Like romantically, I was drawn to
Rapper
somebody.
light, rapper light.
Yes. Oh, that was so hot though. It's like I still will be attracted to that type sometimes. Like I'm like, oh, come on, Amber. Really?
So good. I love it.
Yes.
And then did he ever catch you? Like, did he ever catch you snooping?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, like the good thing about our relationship is, we were long distance for a long time. We were really close. We were really good friends. And so he was incredibly understanding, probably way more so than he should have been. And I do not advise, like, if you are in a relationship that feels controlling, that feels like, oh, you know what, this person's invading my privacy or this person is being verbally abusive, like, don't stay in that because, like, oh, hey, they were traumatized. I do not agree with that at all. I will just say that I felt like communication with my husband was what saved our marriage, essentially. But in those early days, because I would just tell him, like, I have this feeling like something's really wrong. And he was just always really open and transparent for me. And I'm not saying that that's the way that every couple should be, or that you should be like, hey, if you don't let me look through your phone, then you're not the person for me. I'm just saying that for me and him, that was something he knew my trauma. Like he knew about my dad, which I had never told anybody I was dating before. Like this was before I did any of my own work. And I had only maybe told like two or three people that my dad was sexually abusive, And so for him, he knew that. And so it made sense to him. And he was just like, I don't have anything to hide. So he, and not saying that if somebody's not letting you go through their phone, that they do have something to hide, just that he was okay with me doing it. So it wasn't like I would sneak it doing it sometimes, but I also would just let him know, like, yeah, I looked through your phone, and that was one way that we kind of my attachment began to get more. I began to trust him a little bit more and a little bit more, probably through an unhealthy way, right? Like I probably shouldn't have needed to go through his phone, but that's what happened.
And then how about his anxious attachment? Did that lessen in time?
No, not
Obviously
today.
not.
No, but I think that that's probably one of the reasons too, where he was more like, where he did let me do those things, right? Like, because he was anxiously attached, he had his own fear of abandonment. So we were two people who came from totally different backgrounds. Like, both of his parents were pastors. And he still, and he grew up with both of his parents in the home, and they were very religious. And so he had his own types of trauma. He came here from Mexico when he was four and had to like completely learn the language and like be thrown into this completely different environment, So he had his own trauma around that. And so I think that that was also probably part of the reason why he would placate a lot of the time when I would do some things like that. And so over time, as I continued to heal, I con started going to therapy. I started understanding what my process was and what was happening to me. And he started learning about his own attachment style. He eventually went to therapy. And so now I feel like we're 13 years in on our marriage. Our anniversary is coming up. But it's been interesting to see him shift and kind of be like, oh, like it's actually not okay for you to do this. And like kind of like be pushing back a lot more than he used to, So that's been cool to watch. So I do feel like his anxious attachment, he feels more secure just because of the length of time, but then also his own work that he's done and like around times where he felt maybe emotionally abandoned and like he couldn't be himself. He has worked through a lot of those things.
Obviously, he's not on the podcast, but was there a particular breaking point for him that pushed him to start going to therapy?
So he started I want to say like a year and a half ago, and it was something for him that he was very hesitant about just because like he was just scared. Like he's like, I never really had that experience. It was really stigmatized in his family system. And he was in the military for 4 years active duty as well. So like he has PTSD, and a lot of those symptoms were coming up. And as I was doing my own work, he was kind of seeing how that was unfolding, and he was just recognizing a lot more that his symptoms were coming up. And a lot of times that would show up in his parenting, right? So my parenting journey and my stuff with CPTSD, he started recognizing like this isn't the way I want to show up, and I'm seeing some patterns from my childhood kind of come into the way that I'm a dad. And so that was a really big breaking point for him in his own journey. Like he's like, I want to be different, but I don't know how. And this pattern keeps showing up. So I want to go work on this.
Well, I want to circle back to your parenting stuff.
Yes.
But I do want to talk a little bit more about your childhood. And so, obviously you don't have to like share any sort of like specifics or details, but I am curious about that day that you did find out that stuff about your dad. Like, do you remember, like, how did you learn? Like, were you like sat down and told, or you were like overhearing conversations?
Yeah, I do remember that. I feel like I've really processed this and I am ready to talk about it, but it's just this is my first podcast where I've really like delved into this side of things. I usually have talked a lot about my mom because she was my, primary parent after my dad left after all of this
We'll get
stuff
there.
came out, which is a whole nother can of worms, right? But yeah. So I was actually, so we had,
You said third grade?
yeah, I was in third grade, and my at this point in time, my parents had been divorced for 2 years. So my parents got divorced when I was in kindergarten.
Do you have
And
many
we,
memories of that?
yeah, I do have memories of that. Ones that I'm still working on in EMDR and things like that. Few and far in between, but like I do remember it. Like I have explicit memories, and that's something I talk a lot about with my clients, like that some of our memories are explicit. We have the concrete memory of it, but a lot of complex trauma survivors, their memories are implicit. They're just in their body. So they're triggered by things, but they don't have a memory of why. They don't remember the specifics. In my childhood, I have a lot of the explicit memories. And so I do have quite a bit of memory of them divorcing, and it was really tumultuous. And then they shared custody.
Do you have siblings?
And I do have siblings. I have an older sister and I have a little brother. And so it was 2 years of them sharing custody. And then we all lived in one room in a house that we rented the room from in San Jose. Which is where I grew up. And so we all shared that room together. And w
With your
our
mom,
cousins,
you mean?
yes, and my siblings, and then our cousins actually ended up living with us as well. So there was a lot of us in this like little house, I mean, this little room. And me and my cousin were actually in bed, like there was a bunk bed in the room. And they thought that we were asleep, but we were awake, and we heard that the disclosure of, that somebody had sexually abused, this family member. And they talked about it. They were telling my mom about it. And then the next day it was just like, you're not going to go see your dad. And then I realized, okay, it was my dad that had done this. So I actually heard the disclosure of it as well, which was extremely traumatizing for my little 8-year-old self. I didn't even know the depths of how traumatizing that was for me until just maybe like a few years ago. Like, oh man, and now seeing my own kids, my son at 8 years old, I'm like, I can't even imagine him overhearing somebody talking about, sexual abuse. And then on top of it turning out to be a family member, you know?
What had your relationship with your dad been like?
We were really close, but, and as a young, like, as I say young, I was only eight. But before the divorce, I always felt closest to my dad. Like, I was daddy's girl, and he was attentive. He would play with me. So as time went on, like after the divorce, he started drinking. Mm-hmm. Both my parents were alcoholics. And, when he would drink, he was really different. And he also started just having a lot of really emotionally abusive behaviors, which at that age, of course, I didn't recognize as emotionally abusive. But now I'm like, what? Why would you ever say or do that to your child? And so as time went on, I started being like, what's going on? I was really conflicted by his behaviors because they just didn't make sense to me. Like, he had never been like that prior to these past couple of years. And so it had started to kind of take a turn where I was like, oh, sometimes when I go over there, I feel icky. Sometimes I, you know, I feel like the stuff he does isn't okay, or I'll see him drunk, or he'll drive us drunk and stuff. And so I had started to feel a little bit uncomfortable. But I would say I was still close to him, you know. I mean, to just, he left and I never saw him again after that.
Never.
Mm-mm. No.
Wow. Do you know what happened to him?
Well, so I ended up finding out he had kind of gone on the run because of the sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And this was something that turned out he had been doing for like years. He had done to his sibling. He had done to other family members. And
obviously had been done to him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which my mom ended up telling me later on, too. And it was generational. And so he ended up leaving and we didn't know where he was for a long time. And then as I got older and as I was pregnant with my first son, I was like, and I was married and stuff. And I was like kind of coming off facing this attachment stuff head on and understanding what had happened to me. And just like, I had this desire to reach out to my dad again. And I had had different like moments. Like when I was 18, I had tried to get in contact with him again, but he was like drunk when I talked to him on the phone and he like cried the whole time. And I was just like, this doesn't feel good. Like, I don't want anything to do with this. And I never talked to him again after that. So it wasn't until I was pregnant with my son, I ended up trying to find him and I found out he had died. So, yeah. I feel like that was just a lot that I just
told you. It was good.
I know I have that questions. It's heavy.
When you said that you had gone to therapy a couple times as a kid, was it related to this?
Yes.
And so did your mom have any sort of conversations like with you about this, or was it kind of just like swept under the rug?
There were conversations. There were never conversations where I was allowed to have grief, where it was talked about of like, this must be so hard for you. Like, how are you doing? All of that was really avoided. The only conversations that I really remember having with my mom is my mom kind of over-disclosing a lot of these details, you know, and talking more negatively about my dad, like out of anger. And whenever he left, we went to his apartment. And now looking back, I'm like, why would you ever have us there looking through his stuff, like going through his stuff? And I'm smiling as I'm saying this, but this was definitely one of those things that I really had to do so much work around, because it's like, you're going through your dad's apartment and all of his stuff's still there. Like, and there's just no, it's like, it's weird. Like, I was treated as almost like, oh, why are you having this kind of like emotional reaction of like crying or just, you know, feeling so upset about it? It's like, you know, that's the way that I was treated. My mom didn't know how to handle her own grief. You know, she came from so much of her own trauma and she had a lot of, I know that this is so common, like to say that she was a narcissist. I don't know that she was a narcissist, but she had narcissistic tendencies and she had a lot of addiction issues, right? And so it was just like, she didn't really see that. Like, how is this impacting my children? There was no there was no understanding of like, okay, how do I tend to them and what's going on inside of them? So there were discussions about it, but it was mostly like her anger and her
Her venting, yeah.
exactly.
Yeah, so
Yes.
like parentified.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, that's such a it's such a unique and complicated trauma because it's like a ton of different types of trauma all in one experience, right? And like it's a form of sexual abuse too.
Which I didn't understand till I was going through my master's program when I realized I did this research
Yeah,
on
maybe explain it for
vicarious.
people to like listen.
So
They might.
it's essentially vicarious sexual abuse, and that's the way that I would describe it. And I didn't understand why I had so many symptoms of someone who had been sexually abused that started to surface as soon as I became sexually active, in all my relationships. And then once I did this research paper on it, it was like, oh, this is a whole thing that's never ever talked about, that I have all of these symptoms of being sexually abused because I was exposed to these vivid details and to understanding and knowing about this sexual abuse that happened. So
Was the paper
that's.
specifically on vicarious sexual abuse? At first, I thought you said bi-curious.
Oh, no, vicarious.
Was there anything
Yes.
interesting that you learned there? Like, had there been much like research on the topic?
Yeah, no. Well, there had been, and I was surprised because you don't hear about it very often. And this is still something that even in my own work and in my own content creation and things like that, I don't talk about because once, like I said, I really don't talk. I've just started to talk about the fact that my dad was a sexual predator. But just overall, excuse me, what I realized when they when I was doing the paper. In fact, you know what? I'm trying to think now. I don't think the paper was about vicarious sexual abuse. I think it was about sexual abuse in general and the shame that so many survivors carry with them. And what I recognized as I was going through the paper and reading the peer-reviewed journals, I came across the vicarious sexual abuse piece. And it just kind of goes through all the different symptoms that sexual abuse survivors have, and how another way that you can get these symptoms is if you've experienced vicarious sexual abuse. You've been exposed to details, you've been
Yeah, what are other
exposed
ways that people
to.
could experience that other than like, I mean, you overheard a conversation, your mom telling you things. I would think it would be parents that are disclosing details about their own sexual activity.
Absolutely. Enmeshment, right? So when we think about enmeshment, that's families with really loose boundaries around things like that, where they're disclosing way too much, or maybe they're sexually active in a place, they're having sex and stuff where like a child is
I could see,
exposed to it,
yeah, I could
right?
see it.
Something like that, or even like I don't know what this would be considered because I personally would say this is sexual abuse if someone's exposed to their parent watching pornography or something like that. So I wouldn't even say that that's necessarily vicarious, but I don't know. I just, yeah.
And what,
What do
like,
you think?
What would be some symptoms that somebody might be experiencing if they did experience vicarious sexual abuse that maybe they're not understanding, like why is this like kind of like what you were saying, but like how might it show up for somebody who is not who doesn't realize that they were a victim of that of vicarious sexual abuse, like how would it might be showing up in their life?
Yeah, so your relationship with sex in general. I felt like, oh, excuse me. I feel like when I'm like speaking and sometimes I'll spit a little bit. I'm like, oh gosh. No,
Good
but
thing is Zoom.
yeah, exactly. Like it's the same thing with attachment stuff. Like I would be okay with casual sex and I would be okay with relational intimacy, but those two things together, it was just like, you know, like
Interesting.
Feeling so I feel like your relationship to sex in general, like needing to be intoxicated or under the influence to like be able to have sexual intimacy, having a lot of shame just in general, right? Like shame is it shows up everywhere, and I had a lot of shame. I was really afraid of men for pretty much, I mean, I feel like I still struggle with that, you know? And with my husband, my fears of sexual, like, are you going to be a sexual predator? Are you going to, you know what I mean? Like, which, and I want to just name this because I think it's so important. There was no red flags of that. And that's so important because if you're seeing red flags of your significant other being a sexual predator, like, for sure, take those seriously. But when you're having gut intuitions or feelings of like, oh my gosh, what if? What if? That's such a big indicator of, okay, there's trauma around this, and let's do some work around that. And when I say gut intuition, I think there is gut intuition, but it's not that. It's like this feeling that doesn't make sense at all. It's just like it comes up because there is some feelings of attachment there. And so a way your body protects yourself is just to be like, okay, something bad, 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 bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same way when it's like they don't text you back and you're like convinced that you're never going to hear from them ever again. You know?
Like that same feeling of like, I know no matter what, they're gonna leave me because at some point in time, they're gonna figure out that I'm not who they think I am, and I'm not worthy of love. And so eventually they're going to leave, right? And that's where those abandonment wounds really, really hit. And it's not gut intuition. It's like, no, that's what your body believes with all of its heart because that's what happened to you, but that's not the truth. So I think that that's also really important to emphasize. But yeah, that shame and
It's killer.
All right, shit shows. Did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common nutritional gaps? It affects 1 in 3 adults and especially women. It often shows up as fatigue, brain fog, weakness, brittle nails. But the problem is that most people don't realize that low iron may be the cause of these issues. That's why I'm here to tell you about Siderol from Pharma Nutra. This is a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomal technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while also avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea, constipation, and all that fun stuff. It is clinically proven to be comparable to IV iron and is formulated with just 2 ingredients, iron and vitamin C. It's vegan, allergen-free, gluten-free. You can take it anytime, anywhere. So if you're that 1 out of 3 with an iron deficiency, head to pharmanutra-us.com and use code adultchild for 10% off your first order. That is pharmanutra-us.com, promo code adultchild for 10% off today. All right, shit shows, the holidays are here. And if you still have names on your list, if you have gifts that you still need to buy, what the heck are you doing? Okay, because I've been telling you about Uncommon Goods for the past 2 months, who make holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. They look for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade. And they have something for everyone, for mom, dad, kids, teens, book lovers, sports fans, foodies, you name it, they got it. Listen to what I just stumbled upon. I just stumbled upon a crochet your own emotional support desk plant kit, a DIY kit for you to be able to crochet an emotional support desk plant. There's got to be somebody out there that has a crocheter in their life that needs this emotional support desk plant. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. And so to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/adultchild. That's uncommongoods.com/adultchild for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Best Seller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Did you, from a like healing perspective, were you addressing the stuff with your mom like before you dove into the stuff with your dad? Were you under the impression that your mom had impacted you more than your dad?
No. I always knew like my, or at least I thought I knew, like as I did more work, that was so much more my healing process, recognizing the depths. Cause my mom in a lot of ways, once my dad left, was my safe parent.
She was the safe
like,
parent.
Yeah. She was my rock. And my mom was so incredibly like fierce. And just like, even though she was abusive, she was also like, no one's going to fuck with you. You know what I mean? So like my mom was extremely protective. And so I didn't recognize how harmful my relationship with my mom was until much later on in therapy. Once I started, and also in my own education process in getting my master's degree, like recognizing like, oh, so that's what this was. That was actually like really not okay and abusive, but I didn't see it as that. Cause it was like, this is the parent that's staying. Like, this is the parent that's here. This is the parent that's not sexually abusive. So this must be like the parent who's not traumatizing me.
Mm-hmm. Was that hard for you to come to terms with?
Yeah. Yeah. So hard.
Yeah. Heartbreaking, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so hard still to even like say out loud. Cause my mom passed away a couple years ago and we still had a relationship. Like we were still in contact. And so it's just, it's hard to say that about your parent. Like, I don't want to say that about her. Like I, you know, on a podcast. I mean, hopefully nobody
should know. Were you ever able to have any of those conversations with her?
Yeah. Yes. And we did have conversations.
And how was it received?
It was a mix. Like sometimes she would be like, I know I was a horrible mom. Like, I know I fucked up. I know I shouldn't have been out at the bars partying when you guys were at home, you know? But then there would be other times where she would like make light of it. Like, oh, you say you've been through all this trauma. Like you say that you've just been, you know, well, I was just such a horrible mom. And she would get into her own defensive parts and really like, or the whole alcoholic thing. I was never an alcoholic. Like I tried to go to a residential treatment facility and they wouldn't even take me because I wasn't that bad of an alcoholic. I was like, girl, come on, you know? So it would be stuff like that, that I could just tell. And that's her own, you know, she never went to therapy. She never did her own work. And so I know that those were her own protective parts. Not that that excuses it by any means, but that like would pop up. But she also had moments where she would be like, yeah, I messed up. And she liked every single one of my posts, you know, and that I created. And she never like said, well, why'd you say that? And I felt like that meant something for me. You know, she followed my Instagram and she saw what I posted and she did apologize. And she did say, you know, I shouldn't have done that. My mom was really abusive to me. And I got to explain to my mom, like what an emotional flashback was and how she had CPTSD most likely. Right. And so all of that was also very healing for me.
So now I want to talk about what came up for you when you became a mom. I mean, it sounds like a lot of daddy issues when it came to your relationship with your husband. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming mom stuff with your kids, but I would also assume, I'm just going to take a wild guess. Like, was there a lot of like being like overly protective with the kids?
Yes. Yeah. And deep fears and intrusive thoughts about sexual abuse.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, definitely. And even with my husband, right? Yeah. Like yeah. I had to set certain boundaries around that just because of my own, for my own safety of like, I don't necessarily feel safe, like with this kind of thing, you know, not anything that he was doing specifically, but it would be like something like, of like our kids do sleep in our bed, you know, like on and off at different stages. It's like, oh, it took me a lot of years and a lot of my own work to be like, oh, it's fine for my husband to sleep in a bed with my kid because it's his kid too. And he's never going to do anything like that. And he's never shown me any kind of red flags of anything like that, you know, and understanding how much of a trauma response was happening for me. Just, and what has always happened to me around men in general, you know, that just like, is anybody safe? And then I ended up having three boys. Mm. So then that was when I really had to do a lot of work around like, okay, I don't want these trauma responses to exist because one day these little boys are going to be men. They're going to be bigger than me. They're going to, you know, want to have interactions and nurturing relationships with their own children. And like, am I always going to have this like deep-seated fear? So I think I was protective. I never really let many people watch my kids or anything like that. We never put my kids into daycare. They did start going to preschool and like summer camps and stuff like that. And all of that, I had to do a lot of my own work around like, you can't be thinking about the worst case scenario all the time. Like you have to let them be, have these experiences, yeah, you know? Yeah. So what I really did with my fears around that was I started talking to them about like sexual abuse, which that sounds so bad, but like, I mean like psychoeducation, right? Like from the time before they could even talk, nobody should ever be touching your penis. Like no, using the anatomically correct names, talking about like nobody should ever be touching your private parts. There's no reason. Like they start washing themselves. Like, and this might feel like extreme to other parents, right? But once again, I did it because it helps me feel safe in terms of like, okay, they're going to be out in the world. I don't want to stop them from having relationships with other people. I don't want to be that mom who's literally like helicoptering over them and has to be with them 24/7. So the way that I felt like I protected them and what brought me a little bit more safety is just like having them understand at a very young age, this should never happen. There's no reason for it. And so that was one of the things that I did do, which I do feel like my husband would always joke around like, that's a little intense, because I would just be like, what if someone says this? What if someone says that? Right. It's like, no, like it's never going to be a
you're
game.
Fucking nuts.
Exactly. My husband's just kind of like, whoa. Yeah.
You have to be able to laugh at it, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm curious if, so other than kind of the sexual abuse showing up in parenting, like were there other things that came up for you as far as just like other unmet needs?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why so much of my work is educating other parents about it, because I felt like I read so many books and what to expect when expecting. And like, it was never even on my radar that I would have so many emotional flashbacks based on my kids' age and just recognizing the levels of abuse and neglect that I experienced, which you just feel so much older when you are that child who's parentified. And when you see your own child, just this little tiny thing at the same age you were when these different experiences happen, it just hits you like, oh, wow, that was really, really bad. And those feelings show up in so many different ways, and it's not obvious. And you don't know that it's an emotional flashback. You don't know why you're triggered, but all of a sudden you're having those intense feelings. Like once again, like something bad's going to happen. They're going to get hurt. So yeah.
Losing it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had so much fear, which also then turned into rage a lot of the time. And I would find myself like not knowing how to discipline, not knowing how to remain calm when my child was having a tantrum. I mean, with my oldest, I didn't even like recognize like, oh, he's having a tantrum because he needs to be comforted. He needs to be held. He needs to be just told like, oh, it's okay. Yeah. it's okay to feel that way, right? Because for me, I had never experienced that. So when I had that revelation, it was just like, oh, okay, that's not bad. Like, kids cry. They have meltdowns. That's their brain. It's not scary. But it is when you've never been able to have those experiences, or you were physically abused when you had that, you know, meltdown, or you were never comforted or allowed to have that grief, you know? So yeah. So a lot of times, one of the reasons that was like my breaking point to going to therapy, was that my son would have these, you know, they got worse because I didn't know how to respond to them, right? Like, he would have meltdown moments and I didn't know how to respond to him. And I was hating the way I was showing up. And I would always be like, oh, I feel so bad about that. Okay. But I couldn't like change it, because mm-hmm. I would say I wasn't going, but once I didn't, my capacity was like here, it was just like, I would scream, response. I would yell, I would grab, right? And not in a way that would ever be considered like, you know, formally like physically abusive, but in, yeah, like it wasn't okay. It was abusive in a way of, I don't want to hurt my child who, you know, I don't want to hit them because they're crying. I don't want to spank them, you know? And so, but then also not knowing any other way to help or to stop or any of those things. So that was my biggest catalyst for going back to therapy. Like, why is this coming up inside of me? And how do I stop the pattern from happening?
What kind of therapy did you do?
I just did regular therapy at first. Like, this was when I was in grad school and I didn't even like know anything about body work. I didn't know anything about EMDR. So I just did typical talk therapy, which in and of itself helps so freaking much. It was just like having a place to go and talk about these experiences that I've had, and understanding how they show up for me, and just having, she was a mom too, you know, my first therapist, and she would just like talk to me about like what to do instead, or give me this other kind of perspective. And it was like, oh, okay. And so that in and of itself, I worked with her for, I want to say 2 years, was really good, but it was just talk therapy. And I think she did a lot of like collaborative stuff, whereas like, we're just having a conversation. We're just kind of like going back and forth, and she's lifting up things that I haven't been able to see or understand, but it wasn't super deep. In fact, she was really like surface level, which is why I was like, I need to find a different therapist, maybe a therapist who's been through some things, you know, not saying she hadn't, but I just could kind of like get this feeling like, I don't feel like you understand quite where I'm coming from, you know? So my next therapist after that was a trauma therapist. And then that's where I started to like do some EMDR work and stuff, which really then started to shift the way that I was showing up.
So was that helpful?
So helpful, like especially with the attachment stuff, because with EMDR, they go back to like, they do a present day trigger. Have you done EMDR?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So present day trigger, and then like kind of floating it back. And it was just so interesting, my float back, you know, moment, because a big thing for me and a core wound is like this, I can't get what I need. And when I feel like I can't get what I need, that's when my trauma response kind of like comes up. And so in motherhood, that happened so often, like, because what I really needed as somebody with CPTSD, as somebody with a frazzled nervous system, was like, I needed way more like consistency and stability and like routine, right? And like, when you have a kid, that kind of just like throws that out of whack. And like, you can't control them. You can't predict what they're going to do. And so I really recognizing and beginning to understand that this trauma response happened so many years ago. And the core memory that was there connected to it was one that I wouldn't have even like.
Yeah. I was going to ask what, like, if you were able to trace that.
Yeah. It was like in my parents' divorce. And my dad had like talked to us about, don't you want to stay with me instead of going with your mom? Because if you stay with me, you can go back to your old school. You can do all this. So basically it was my mom's turn to like switch off custody with us. And my dad didn't give us back to her. Like, so she was like at the door, and I was maybe like six. And I just remember screaming, like, I wanted my mom so bad. Like, And my dad was like, no, you made your decision. Like, you wanted to stay here. Like, you wanted to, you know, stay here. So that's what we're going to do. And that was this memory that, like, was kind of, like, not even on my radar. But once we processed through that, it just, like, freed up so many things for me. In terms of even with my husband and that attachment, because I would be like, sometimes I just like feel suffocated from him. Like, I can't get what I need. Like, you're not giving me space. Like, I need more space. Like, I need to just be away from everybody. Cause isolation was just like, would always be how I survived, you know? And so, after that, doing the EMDR reprocessing about that specific memory, really helped a lot of those triggers of just like the rage that would come out of me when I feel like I can't get space. I can't get what I need.
That's so interesting. I mean, this got to be pretty common, but I don't know if I've ever heard it like spelled out or have someone say, like, you know, when I ask like, what's the biggest core belief that I can't get what I need. It's really interesting. So does it mostly show up in relationship? Does it show up in the relationship with yourself at all?
The only way that I can think of it showing up in the relationship with myself is that I won't give myself breaks, right? So like, I can't get what I need. Like, I do that to myself. Mm-hmm. I drive myself, and I see this in so many survivors. I drive myself to my breaking point, and I don't give myself the rest. I don't give myself what I need. And then that's still my story. Like, I can't get what I need. I can't get what I need. So that was so empowering for me to realize, like, I can figure out what my capacity is, and I can actually like give that to myself. And that was really empowering, because learning about my nervous system and learning about my body and just being like, oh, I was never this like horrible person. It was just like, I was just so pushed to my max that when something would happen, it would be like a breaking point for me. And substance use was always something that I would use to push past that too. And so just recognizing like, yeah, I can give myself what I need. And that, I think, was my adaptive cognition, I want to say, like, for the end, you know, because you're supposed to have the one that you want to believe. And that was just a really big turning point for me in my own healing journey. Like, it's not up to my husband to know what I need. Like, it's up to me to let him know and to also provide that for myself. And that was really empowering.
Did you guys ever go to therapy together?
We still haven't, but I do want to. It's just, we've been on our own individual journeys, but I feel like we're at a point now where we're like 13 years in, and I'm like, we just need to like spice things up a bit. So let's go to therapy and just see how that helps and just like helps us evolve, you know?
When he said that he was going to therapy, were you like, woohoo?
Girl, I found his therapist for him. I was like, this guy, you're going to like this guy. Like, and that's when he was like, he found him and he loved him and everything like that. But so I think when I was like, woohoo, it was once he got established with the therapist and was just like, I'm in this, because he started doing brain spotting with his therapist and just seeing him evolve. Like, I'm just like, man, I love that. So I think that's why when I was like, woohoo, because I was skeptical that he was going to like
stick with it. Yeah,
exactly.
That you're just giving me lip service. Yeah.
Yes.
Is brain spotting is kind of like EMDR light.
Yeah. Yes. Kind of. And I don't know a ton about it. I'm not trained in it, but I have heard. Yeah. Like, it's basically very similar to EMDR, but it's less intensive. So I love how you said EMDR light.
It's more of like you would. Yeah. Maybe you could do it just in one session. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I had someone try to explain it to me. So I'm curious about, I mean, this doesn't seem like it would apply to you, but for women that you work with, whether it's their own healing journey or perhaps they're seeing trauma responses in their own kids and want to get their kids help, but having a partner who is not supportive or like on the same page, just kind of like navigating that journey.
Yeah. I say give an ultimatum. Just be like, if you don't, I'm going to divorce you. Totally joking. There is a part of me that is just like, yeah, do that. No, take but don't. Curve, don't do that. Just be like, okay, bye. No, I think that that is probably one of the most challenging parts of marriage and parenting together in general, is just not seeing eye to eye on things like that. I would say just continue pushing conversations with your significant other about why this is so important. Because I think there's also a lot of fear around getting your child support. Like if there's trauma responses coming up, and that fear kind of keeps people from taking the next step. But there's really nothing scary about a child going into, for the most part, like at least not that I've seen, going to a therapist just for a few sessions, like just to have an outside perspective, right? Like thinking of it as like pulling in supports. Like there's this response coming up in my kid and I don't understand it. Well, pull in support. Like support is what we all need. And when we have that support, everything feels a little less scary. So I think just maybe not as much emphasis on coming like right at like, oh, there's this trauma, this is a trauma response, or this is a mental illness, but more just like, I want to understand what's going on and this is why, and it's going to help both of us. So let's pursue this.
Mm-hmm. And how about navigating the shame that comes with parenting of not starting healing sooner or being in the midst of it? I mean, I know a ton of parents struggle with that. Just like, yeah, the damage that they've, you know, caused in spite of being on this healing journey. And so many parents never hop on board or don't start healing until their kids are grown. But I know that there's still like, there can still be a lot of shame and guilt that comes with it.
Yeah. Yeah. As you said that, I guess something that came up for me was just that like those moments still hit me. Like, yeah, I said this thing, I did this thing. And I mean, let's just face it. Like that still happens. Like there's still times where I do or say something that I regret, or I'm like, did I screw my kids up? Like, did I screw up my oldest son's, you know, attachment style, you know? Like I just worked through that recently with my own therapist. Like, she's like, you know what? It's a very real thing that the way that you reacted with your oldest could have caused some insecure attachment. Like, and that's okay. Like, not okay in the way of like, well, yay, let's what celebrate else? It. But yeah, that like, that like, you're doing everything you can now to repair that, to be different, to learn, to understand better what is happening inside of you. And so like, I think that that's where something that's been really helpful for me with shame is kind of turning towards myself in this way of like, oh, yeah. Because really shame is like, I feel like for me, a younger part, a part that's just like, I'm so bad. I'm so bad. I'm just like them. Mm-hmm. I've destroyed everything and like nothing's going to be okay. And I've hurt somebody that I've loved. And so when we hear that shame voice too, I think just being cognizant of like, okay, yeah, that's about today. That's about this thing that happened with your child. And that's also so many different parts of you that like are younger, that are from in your past, that are telling you you're bad, that are telling you you're a horrible parent, that all of that self-hatred shows up in so many different areas, not just parenting. So I think the anecdote for that is just understanding like how to have compassion for ourselves. That it doesn't make it okay that we reacted in that way or we said that thing, but that it makes sense because it's threaded throughout us, and that all we can do is look forward and kind of turn towards, what do I need to learn? Like, how can I support myself? How can I pull in supports to help understand that part of me in a way that's going to help then my kids? And then to go back in with repair, like with my son, he still brings up stuff. He has like the best memory. I'm like, oh man, how do you remember that? You know,
all these like, explicit memories.
Exactly. He's like, remember when you said this to me or something? And there is always this instance, right? That shame will tell me like, don't admit to it. Like, don't say you did that. Like,
I have no idea what you're sure talking about.
Like, it's like, there's literally a pull towards me to gaslight my own child. Like, that didn't happen, you know? But just being able to say, like, that did happen. And that was so wrong. And that was abusive in a lot of ways. And that should have never happened. And I am so incredibly sorry for that, right? No excuse. No, like, hey, my mom used to do that to me all the time, right? And that's why I did it to you. No. Mm-mm. Just, I am so sorry. I had a reaction and that was, I did something that hurt you and that was completely wrong. So just remembering, like, to have compassion for ourselves and then turn towards our child, whatever their age is, and repair and just take full responsibility. That's it. There's no excuses. There's no reason why I had this reaction. The reason why is what you need to work out with in your own therapy, right? Like, and down the road, like, I think our children will know more about our own personal stories and what we went through. And, but right now, and even later on, the repair is still just like the crucial part of just, and so oftentimes shame just says, like, don't admit that you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Don't acknowledge it. Don't say that's real. No. But like, what we really need to do is just understand that, like, we all screw up and our own backgrounds are going to come into our parenting. So repairing that is really crucial.
Yeah, it's what we all want.
Yeah.
What really were some ways, like, working mom, three kids, like, what were ways that you were able to, like, find time to regulate your nervous system? Like, what did that look like?
For me, it was really having moments of downtime, which I never really would give myself. Like, I was doing things all the time. And I was the mom that was like, when my kids are napping, I want to get stuff done. I mean, I was in school when my kids were young. And so I would, like, do homework assignments when my kids were napping. And what I really learned about myself was, like, I need downtime. And so in the middle of the day, you know, like, when it was my kids' nap, I would go into my room and I wouldn't allow myself to do anything. And I would just, like, have some downtime where I am not being productive at all. And I'm just resting and I'm letting my body decompress. That was really big for me. And even, like, bedtime, my kids go to bed really early. Naturally, one, because their own circadian rhythms get them up really, really early. But two, like, for me, I was like, by 8 o'clock, I'm like, yeah. Like, I have no more patience. I'm just like, I just want to be able to relax and do what I want to do and watch my TV shows. And so for me, it was really like, okay, let's have this routine where you're in bed and you're reading, you know, and we've done our bedtime routine, because, like, bedtime routine in my house would take like an hour and a half of reading them their stories and snuggles and stuff. And so it's like, then I'm not at my wit's end by the time we're putting you to bed. And if you do whine, I'm not like, oh my gosh, like, I can't take this, right? So it was all about learning, like, how to honor my capacity and giving myself the downtime and the breaks that I needed throughout the day.
Tell me about your parenting course.
Yeah. So my parenting course, I'm so excited about it.
Is it new?
It is new. Well, so I launched it in January of this year as a program where I did live coaching along with it. And now it's totally self-paced, and I do the coaching program. I'm going to only do that like once a year. So I'm going to do that in January. But
is it like a group thing?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. So it is a group thing when I run it, where I am actually coaching. And it's usually around like 10 women that will join me. And I have the course and the modules, but then I'll also be like answering any questions for them or just like working through the stuff that comes up with them in real time. And what is the best thing about it for me, like, as a parent, I always went to courses. I always went to content that was all about, like, here's how you have to show up for your child. Mm. And there was very little information about, like, how your trauma is showing up in you and how to tend to yourself in order to then be a better parent to your child. And for trauma survivors and a lot of the women that I work with, they just, like, have no idea how their trauma is showing up in their parenting. And they like, they see all these scripts and they see what you're supposed to do. But there is a big disconnection between what they're supposed to do and then what shows up for them when they're in their trauma response. So the whole course is about like how to work through your own trauma and then in turn be able to be the parent that you want to be for your child.
Yeah, I think a lot of the times people can have a misconception about almost it being selfish, like choosing to take the time to do your own work, or even like in certain situations, I almost feel like, you know, I think about when I was sent to therapy as like a kid, and like it probably would have been more beneficial to me if my parents had gone to therapy instead of me. You know?
Yeah. Yes. And I specialized in children when I first graduated. And that's what I was finding. I was like, these parents want to be different. They want to break the cycle. And they just have no idea of these things, of how CPTSD is showing up in their parenting, how their ACEs, how their adverse childhood experiences are showing up in their parenting. And so that's what I really wanted to do with this course, was like take the work, all the work that I've done with like polyvagal theory and the nervous system and understanding when I'm in fight or flight and dorsal vagal and how those things show up, which is like the functional freeze, the shutdown, right? And then be able to bring myself that safety and connection and get that system online, which is so oftentimes offline for survivors of complex trauma, where there's that huge relational component, and just bring safety to my body. And then also have the psychoeducation behind like, what is coming up? What is an emotional flashback? Why is it showing up in my parenting? And how does it feel? Because once you're aware that you're in an emotional flashback, it's like you can bring soothing to yourself. But so many times previously, when I would be in an emotional flashback, I wouldn't recognize that that's what it was. So I'm like helicoptering my kids. I'm like, I don't want them to go to school today because something bad's going to happen. Like, I don't, you know, I have to do this. I have to do that. Like, and just if I would have just been able to go into those younger parts and just been like, oh, you're so scared right now, and like let myself know I was safe, that would have shifted so many different things.
When did you start getting into parts work?
So I feel like it's around the same time polyvagal theory came on my radar, which was after grad school. Like maybe like, I want to say 2021, I started like hearing about parts. I had known about inner child work previously, but never like the different parts. And whenever I really started delving into complex trauma, it was like, oh, the part IFS.
Did you learn about complex trauma at all in grad school?
No. No.
So screwed up.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
I know. It's crazy. I didn't learn anything about somatic work, like how it shows up. We read the body.
So how was it? Was it through your own journey? Like, do you remember?
Yeah.
Do you remember when you realized that you had CPTSD?
Yeah.
I think it was like the second therapist you had?
Therapist. Yeah. The therapist that I went to that I did EMDR with. That's when I started. She had brought it up. Excuse me. And I started realizing like, oh, whoa, that fits. Like started looking into it. It was like, oh, okay. That's why I have these reactions. Like every single thing fit. And it was just like, how did I go this whole time not even knowing or hearing about it? And so many of my clients come into me like that. And I'm like, oh, well, here, you have you ever heard of CPTSD? They're like, what? No.
Yeah. And they've probably been in therapy for years.
Yeah. And then they're instantly like a few weeks in, like, I already feel better. And it's like, yeah, because like we're doing this combination of things that you've never done before. And you could be in talk therapy for years and just still not understand why these patterns keep popping up and stuff. But when you add in the parts and you add in the nervous system and you're like kind of just doing all these little, it's just you instantly start feeling better.
Had you been doing inner
my experiences?
I agree. Had you been doing inner child work before you started doing parts work?
Yes. Yeah. I always did inner child work, but I'm
taking it deeper. Like what?
Like for me personally, or for clients?
No, for you.
For me personally, it was like immediately, like, oh, there's the wound. Whereas like before, when I was, because also remembering, like, which I think is similar to your story based on what I know, like when you're a parentified child, you don't really see yourself as a child as much. So I think for me, when I connected to that inner child, like something just shifted. And it was just like, I recognized all this like facade of being strong, of just like, I'm healed, I'm good, like was so fake. It was like, that was totally another part that had helped me survive, thankfully. But it was like, I could access my grief so much easier. I could access my wound and tend to my wound so much easier when I was able to access my inner child and really like, which everyone has access to that, right? But I think you have to be really intentional about doing that work. And sometimes for complex trauma survivors, I'm curious what you think about this. This has been my experience with a lot of my clients. There's like a disconnect to your inner child at first. It's almost like,
oh, me.
I don't really care too much about you. Like, it was that me. Was your experience?
Yeah, no. I mean, I just thought, I knew it was important, but I just thought it was stupid.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was stupid. I thought it was corny at first. I just like, I remember like going to ACA meetings and seeing people like bring a stuffed animal. And I'm like, okay, this is shit so weird. And then I could get on board, but I think taking it to the IFS level has just been so impactful and healing for me, and to really tease it all out, you know, and really just being able to observe in myself. I mean, I remember the other day I was so triggered, and it's like first time sitting there and it's like, okay, that's the numb part. Like, I'm just like completely numb. And then when I finally get the numb part to go away, then like, oh, here comes the hypervigilant part. Like for me, what's really interesting, and I've been talking to my therapist about this, is like, I feel everything just in my extremities. Like where it shows up for me is like, I just get like energy, anxiety in the top of my arms and the top of my legs. And I don't know if there's some sort of a blockage, like occasionally, maybe I'll feel some tightness in my chest, but like, and I don't know if it's multiple parts just showing up in those areas, but that is where I'm mostly like energized. But there's like, there's so much going on in there. And I think so too, because I was so parentified, and I mean, I got sent to therapy at 9. I mean, I was in rehab by 14. Like, you know, I saw a psychiatrist from the age of 12 to 18. And I think I just had this, I thought I understood everything. And I thought I understood why I had certain coping mechanisms, like what the root of them was, or like what I thought that they were being accomplished. But it's like, because I'm viewing it from my adult brain. I'm not, you know, viewing it through the lens of that child who like really didn't even have access to her child parts when she was a child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm a little adult then.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting that you say that, because something that came up for me when you said like about your arms and like this feeling, it's curious.
It's a flight response.
Yeah. Well, that, like I did an EMDR session one time, and it was also somatically informed, right? So she's like, what does your body want to do right now? And like, I was like, I feel the energy like going to my arms. And like, I just kind of went with what we were doing in EMDR. And at some point in time, I had been sobbing, and then I'm kind of like going like this, right? And I'm like, this is what my arms wanted to do. And she just like stopped. She's like, okay. She's like, I just want to remind you that you are a 38-year-old woman. And like, it just like hit me like a ton of bricks that like this younger part of me is sitting there like asking to be lifted up, to be held, right? And I think that that's something that came up for me as you're talking, is like, so oftentimes we were emotionally neglected and we couldn't get what we needed from our parent, right? And then when those younger parts show up and they're just like there and they do something like that, it just feels surreal. It's like, oh my gosh, yeah, I need to be held.
I think it is like a feeling of like, I just got to get out of my body. And when I look at the I don't know if you've ever looked at like the ACA laundry list traits, but like the ones I identify the most with are mostly like flight, you know, traits, which I think is common for people like with substance abuse issues. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's been IFS doesn't come as naturally as to me as it does for like a lot of people. Like I'm not great at visualizing things. But it's been like really life-changing. And I would say like for my community, like that really seems to be the modality that's really helping people in some pretty profound ways. I think it's where it's at.
Yeah. Yes. I love IFS. It is so hard to get trained in it, though. Like, it's so expensive. But if you have somebody who's IFS informed, that can be just as good.
Anything else you want to shill, push, promote? So do you work with people one-on-one all the time?
Yes, I do. And I see clients in Indiana. I do have a wait list, but if you are in Indiana and you
Shout out
what I said resonates
Indiana.
with you, hit me up. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. Though, like I do just my practice and my course, and then this that it will be like the live group coaching program coming in January, and you can sign up for my wait list on my website.
And can people sign up for the course in January already?
Yeah, so you can also just purchase the course at any point in time and just without like completely self-paced. But yeah, you can sign up for the wait list in January already too on my website.
And who would you say is like the ideal person for the course?
Moms with ACE scores of 5 or more, so adverse childhood experiences. If you've never taken the ACEs test, highly recommend it. If you resonate with having CPTSD, of having these complex trauma experiences, and just traumatic experiences in general. Like, even if you have PTSD, like you had an experience where you were traumatized, beneficial, extremely beneficial to understand how that impacted your body and how to bring safety back to your body and to explore those patterns and the way that those triggers are showing up with your children.
Are there many resources out there for dads with CPTSD?
Ooh, no, there's like not very many out there for moms with CPTSD. So with the course, with the self-paced course, it's for dad. You can be a dad and do it. With the coaching program, I just
Just
did for
for women.
moms. Yeah. But I feel like it's really gender neutral in terms of like
The
a dad
course.
could totally get a lot out of this course as well. But yeah, there's really not that many resources out there
Yeah,
for
there
dads
needs
in
to be
general.
more. So, well, it was great having you.
Yeah, so nice to meet you.
All right, shit shows. Breathe to Heal is officially back, and this time we're going deeper than ever before. The theme of this third round is release and receive, releasing everything that's been stuck for way too long so you can finally receive the peace, love, and safety I know you've been craving. This 7-week healing journey goes beyond talk therapy by working directly with your nervous system using breathwork, somatic practices, and parts work to give you the kind of healing your body has been waiting for. This is all facilitated by fellow shit show member and certified somatic and breathwork practitioner Teresa, who's just added some fresh breathwork certifications to her toolkit. And the best part of all, this all happens right within the shitshow healing community. So think of it like a healing journey where you can show up exactly as you are, like you're hanging out with your friends on the couch in your pajamas, instead of feeling like you're in some stuffy environment. So this all kicks off on Tuesday, January 13th, and early bird pricing is on through December 11th. So you, yes you, the person that's been wanting to sign up for the past two rounds but hasn't, how about we do the damn thing already, okay? Head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. That is breathe with an E at the end. adultchildpodcast.com/BREATHE to heal to learn more and grab your damn spot.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.